Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Our guest this evening is Shlomi Hayoun, a multimedia artist based in Los Angeles. His vibrant murals and abstract designs combine street and pop art. Shlomi's works, inspired by his extensive background in music production and training in fine arts, have led to his signature style of works, which have been exhibited and installed in various global venues and street art festivals, such as in Los Angeles and Israel. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You have a strong background in music, and you draw from your spirituality and cultural roots to develop your vibrant and luminous art pieces. Can you elaborate and give us a few examples of your works that reflect this inspiration?
Of course. Well, starting out in music, I was a sound engineer and a vocalist songwriter, so that is still a huge part of my life. Music is one of my biggest loves and passions. So going into art, I was like, looking for a subject. And naturally, it was music. So my first line was dedicated to music, as mine, but my first line was drawing on music instruments. If it's like a mix board, microphone, or a guitar, or a drum set, I did it. And then I took it to the next level by cutting a drum set in half, or a snare drum in half, and having it become a piece of wall art, something that you could hang on a wall. Or I would see like a violin, sand it down and then repaint it, mixing both of my passions together, being the music instrument and color.
When you started in art, were there any particular mentors or musicians or other artists that have been influential?
As far as music, first time seeing Michael Jackson, I think it was jaw-dropping, just seeing the fans crying and singing. I told my mom, I'm like, he's not doing anything. How does a person make someone cry like that from a distance? Being a young kid, I didn't know the power that a musician has. If it being through performing or the lyrics or the music itself, that has a great influence on us. So that's something that really, really opened my eyes. And I was like, wow, that's so inspiring. I want to do that one day. So, you know, doing the moonwalk on my parents' wood floor. I always wanted to become a musician, almost said magician, but it's kind of the same thing when you talk about Michael Jackson. As far as art, my mom used to oil paint as a hobby, and she stopped when I was born. We joke in the family and say that all the talent was given to me because my mom forfeited it when I was born, so a little joke. I don't know, I always liked making things, you know, or taking my dad's drill apart, or putting together puzzles, or playing with Legos, or building blocks, or just creating, just making something. I was kind of obsessed with. I made my own toys as a child.
The music inspiration also comes through in one of your newer collections, the Fallen Legends series, honoring legendary music icons. Can you describe a little bit about the series and some insight to the process that you use?
Yes, the Fallen Legends series was actually a tribute to the Hollywood Palladium in Los Angeles. I was asked to put some artwork there, and I didn't want to do one pop art, one Judaica, one Hamza. So let me come up with a series, and this series is everyone who performed at the Hollywood Palladium, from Frank Sinatra, which opened up the Hollywood Palladium in 1940s, all the way up to Nipsey Hussle, which passed away in 2019. So it's going throughout all the history of the Hollywood Palladium, and it's all these pop icons. Now, funny thing is, I always promised myself I would never do pop icons, because everyone's done it. We've always seen Marilyn Monroe and Bob Marley and all that. So I was approached with this, and I said, you know what? Why not? Let's do it. Now, the backgrounds are very, very vibrant, multicolored. It really pops. And faces are very ghost-like, which means very white and dull of color. And I did that on purpose to show that these artists might have passed, but their music is still very vibrant, still very much alive, and will be good for the rest of our lives. Music goes on forever.
What distinguishes your signature style in the murals that you do? And perhaps give us an example that you may have done at the Jewish Art Festival and what that experience was like.
Yes, I tend to use a lot of spray paint. I'm not a mural artist. I do murals. As an artist, I feel like we solve problems creatively. So the problem is, okay, I need to make this in a bigger scale. How do I do that? Just find different ways to do it. But as far as my signature look, it's mostly the bright colors that I use and the way I put them together in an abstract way, but there's still a balance. So the one I did in Jerusalem was multicolored, very bright drips and splatters and blendings of colors and different patterns. On top of that, I chose to put a chamsa, which to reflect my family's background. And also it's something that unifies people and has a positive message.
Would you like to explain what the Khamsa is?
Sure. So the Khamsa symbol is the hand with the eye in the middle of it. And a lot of different cultures have used this symbol throughout history. If it being Arabs or Moroccans, Jews, now you see a lot of it in America. You'll see models wearing Khamsas. Just funny that that symbol has lasted for so long and people are still using it. Now, what this symbol represents is the warding away negative energies or the evil eye. So, you know, when you get a new car or a baby is born or whatever, people, it's customary to say, oh, bli ayin hara, which means without the evil eye, to ward out any negativity or jealousy that one other person might have. So being that our country is so divided here in America, I do that all over. I get to paint Khamsas in different cities to show like, okay, we might be divided, but let's bring some positivity to this area.
What was the experience like in the Jewish Street Art Festival in Israel and doing the work there?
It was such a blessing. I always wanted to make a piece in Jerusalem, the holy city, and to collaborate with a whole bunch of other artists, well, 9 other artists to be exact, from all over the world to come together in the Holy Land to do what we love and leave our mark in the first our train stations over there was a big honor for me.
Nice. Is this the first one they've had, or have they had a number of them?
As far as the Jewish street art, this is the first event that they did, but they went alongside with the Jerusalem Biennale biannual, which has been going on for a couple of years now. I want to say like 5 years now. Every year, Jerusalem and artists and curators and gallery owners come together and they put together a Jerusalem Biennale and have an art walk and art show. So they asked us to join, and the leader of it, the guy that put everything together, his name is Hillel Smith, a buddy of mine from Los Angeles. He asked me to come out to Israel to do this artwork. He put everything together, and it was just an amazing turnout.
How does your background and living in LA and doing some of the traveling give you an opportunity to meet with other artists and share ideas and such to enhance your work?
It's funny you say that because I'm actually filming a documentary about the process itself, about leaving my corporate job to go ahead and become a full-time artist. And it's not just about me, but the connections that us artists make along the way. You mentioned to someone that you do art, they want to connect you with someone, and then all of a sudden you're painting a piece, and then someone else comes by and it's like, oh, I'm an artist. And, or just meeting different artists, like in Jerusalem, meeting all these artists that I've heard of before and have been following them on Instagram and on Facebook, and now to actually meet them and work alongside them. It was really, really cool, and to learn from them and them learn from me. I'm in Miami right now, and I just did a piece with Muli, which is an artist as well, and he's based in the East Coast. He's like, yo, just by being here, I just learned so much of my process of how I use paint or how I apply it onto the wall, not just like with a brush or a spray gun, but I'll find kids' toys or a water gun, you know, just to spray it. So just different techniques, different things that we just experiment with and just learn from each other and teach each other.
What would you advise younger artists in order for them to get more exposure and experience in the art field?
I would suggest is don't focus on the exposure too much. Focus on honing your skills and gaining that experience, paying your dues, whatever it may be. Everything else will come. People focus too much on becoming famous and getting that exposure or getting those likes or whatever, but they forget what they really started doing it for. Hone your skills, hone your craft, dedicate your free time to it, and just continue with it, and everything will fall into place. Once you feel you are ready, then start posting, you know, let the world see it.
And how did you get your work into exhibitions? You mentioned the one for the Jewish Street Art Festival, but what about some other exhibitions, and do you have anything really exciting coming up?
It's funny you say that. I never expected to be in all these events and galleries and shows and fairs. It all started with one post. I was doing what I love and as a hobby and posted on Facebook, and I happened to have a friend that owned a gallery, and he said, let me come show in my gallery.
Nice.
And then from that gallery, another gallery owner came in and I have a gallery, by the way, I would love to show your work. I'm like, okay. Then at that show, another friend, I made friends with one of the artists, and he's like, oh, I'm doing a group show, you should come show, let me introduce you. So it's a lot of luck. Let's be real. A lot of luck. A lot of making connections, breaking door downs. I went to galleries myself, knocked on a door and said, I love what you're showing here. I think I'll be a great fit. Just doing the work, you know, putting in the work and just going door to door. Do what you got to get where you want to be.
Do you have another exhibit coming up?
I am getting ready for the LA Art Show, which is a huge show at the Los Angeles Convention Center. So I'm gearing up towards that. Just got done with Miami Art Basel. Got to fly back to Los Angeles and get ready for the LA Art Show. There was 3 different events that I was showing my art in. Some around Wynwood, some in South Beach at a hotel, and one at a private home. I was pretty active.
Basel Art Shows generally bring in a lot of other events and opportunities for other galleries. So that's great.
Exactly.
That you're
so it gets a little bit wishy-washy when people are like, oh, I showed at Basel. It's like, no, you showed in Wynwood. So I don't want to come off saying, oh, yeah, I showed at the convention center in Basel. Not yet. Anyone listening want to represent me, I'm open for that.
I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and insight with us. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And we wish you continued success in your practice.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
That was Shlomi Hayun speaking with us from Florida. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Our guest this evening is Bette Ridgway, highly acclaimed for her signature technique of orchestrating layers of light and brilliant colors across a large, carefully placed canvas, creating a symphony of rhythmic movements in her compositions. Bette has studied in a broad range of programs, such as the Albany Institute of History and Art and the New York School of Interior Design in New York, the Centre de Culture Albert Camus in Madagascar, Art and Architecture at the University of San Diego, Chile, and more. She has also studied private instruction with a number of skilled artists. She's experienced a wide range of natural landscapes and sensational colors growing up surrounded by magnificent mountain landforms near New York, working in the desert scene of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and exploring several more in her extensive travels that inspire her work. She has explored the works of many renowned artists during her travels and practice and was fortunate early on to be mentored by Paul Jenkins for many years. Bette's work has been nationally and internationally recognized with her participation in several solo and group exhibitions in the U.S., Madagascar, Chile, Australia, to name a few, and this year she's been invited to exhibit her work at the London and Venice Biennales. Her work may be found in numerous prestigious collections and has been written about in a wide variety of art publications. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Susan. I hope I can live up to that introduction. My goodness.
I'm sure you'll have no trouble. Your paintings seem to resonate a sense of a fascination with colors that come to life in a symphony of flowing rhythmic movements. Looking back, what would be your earliest memories of exploring with colors?
I can remember as a child growing up in the Adirondack Mountains, where we have hundreds of lakes and mountains and wonderful landscapes. I can remember as a very young child being fascinated by the bark of the white birch trees. You know how it's in layers?
Yeah.
I can remember pulling some of it off and drawing pictures on it. And I vividly remember the way the light would hit the snow, and then when it would melt in the spring, I would run outside, and there had to be some kind of prisms happening because I remember seeing colors as the sun was hitting the melting snow. So I've been fascinated by color forever. And in 1980, I really started studying color in a big way, reading everything I could find and attending workshops. So color is kind of my middle name. I just love it. I thrive on it. I dream of it when I'm asleep.
Was there a turning point in your early career that inspired your unique style and signature technique?
Well, you did mention Paul Jenkins, my wonderful mentor who passed in 2012. Prior to meeting Paul in 1979, I was doing wonderful little watercolors. They were just fine. I was teaching watercolor, and I was beginning to experiment with acrylics. And he looked at my slides. He never saw any original pieces, but he looked at my slides, and he pointed out to me that the real paintings were in the background, in the skies and in the water, and he encouraged me to eliminate subject matter and to work really big. And that really threw me because I had never considered such a thing. So I went back to my studio and I bought big canvases and they were stretched. And I tried to work big and they were horrible. Susan, they were awful. And I would work and work and work. And after 7 or 8 years, I sent him slides and he said, yes, okay, you're ready for a show. So it took me that long to really get into the pouring technique. And I still have not mastered it. It's just so difficult and unpredictable that I expect to spend the rest of my life trying to tame this technique.
Why tame it?
I know. It's too much fun just watching it go, isn't it?
It is. Just watching you in that Crayola video, it was just explosive. Can you tell us a little about some of the films you've made and what that was like when you explain your process to your audience?
Well, I decided that for me, teaching is very important. Teaching really, it teaches me a lot more than any students. It puts me on edge. I'm really on. I have to think. I have to understand what the process is and be able to explain each and everything that I'm doing. And I began to study filmmaking, and I discovered that I could work with some music, and I could take photographs of my work and put them to music. And they were very amateurish, I have to honestly tell you that. But I had so much fun with them and realized that over time, the constant thing in all my work is color and layering and light. And so I came up with the phrase to describe my work, which is layering light. And so the filmmaking contributed a lot to my own investigation of the technique. Seeing the work on a smaller screen in a series coming in, fading out, it kind of gave me a whole perspective on the work that I hadn't really seen until I put it into little films. Last year I did a big commission, a painting 15 feet high by 21 feet wide, and a very wonderful Italian filmmaker did a little documentary on this commission. It's only 5 minutes, but he tells a beautiful story, and he composed the music. It can be viewed on my website. It was the Boro Project, B-O-R-O Project, which is now installed in Virginia.
Well, I know looking at them, your compositions capture a spontaneous sense of rhythm and flowing movement of lines and light and design. And can you describe your process by describing one of your works?
Well, I'll have an idea of what I want to do when I go in the studio. It's usually some colors are in my head. I suspend the unstretched canvas on a series of supports. I use ladders and step stools, and I use wooden crate that don't move, that are pretty solid, and little stools, and I attach the canvas with push pins on all these things, and I compose as I go. I'll start with one color. Sometimes another will be added to it as it's flowing. Then I'll let it dry, and I'll change the shape and then put more colors on. So I'm shaping the canvas, determining where I want the paint to go. The high parts, of course, don't get it or it rolls off. And so there's a little catch pan at the bottom that gets the excess paint, which I've learned actually how to save some of it because it's expensive to do this. And I've learned to put coffee cans and catch some of that paint. But it takes many, many days to layer a piece. And if you look at them closely, you can actually see, it's very architectural, you can actually see the background colors that are put on first, that are they're more washes, and then the paint gets more and more dense as I begin to finish it.
It's amazing the different directions and patterns that those colors poured in a variety of different ways can make.
It is. It's limitless.
You spent your youth surrounded by the mountains in upstate New York and with your travels experiencing so many different natural landscapes and sensational colors. How do these surroundings and elements of nature inform your artistic nuances and how do you express this connection in your work?
Nature informs almost everything. And then I add to that music. Music is very important to me. I do piano. I study for years. And the music that I use actually sets the tone for the work I'm doing. If I'm working on something kind of simple and light and maybe monochromatic, I put music on that reflects that. If I'm doing something very bold and filled with many colors, I'll put some really good jazz or maybe some hard rock on, something that stimulates the listener or the viewer. So the work is informed by how I'm feeling, nature, and music. And I don't know, you've probably studied art. You know a great deal about art. I've been told that artists, whatever they paint, they're putting themselves on the canvas. I think that's very interesting. I'm looking at my work kind of differently, looking, oh, really, that was me that day or that week. So I guess we come at our work from many directions. And for me, it's all about size. I love big work. People say, why do you work so big? Well, I don't want to be overlooked. Simple as that. And there's a niche for large work. There's a certain market for that kind of work, and there aren't many people doing it. So I feel very lucky.
Do you work large scale when you do some sculpture, and what sort of work do you do in that?
Well, the sculptures, they vary, and I like to do them in a series of three. They're called trilogy, and the triangular shape is a column that is a triangular shape. For me, represents body, mind, and spirit. And so they can be done in almost any size, and with the aluminum, I have a fabricator put them together for me. Then I put, again, layering color over color over color with a bronze finish so that the colors are very subtle and they're beautiful, especially at night outside when you have solar lights on, hitting them at nighttime, they glow. So my dream is to make some really big ones. So maybe that will happen one day.
They remind me of prisms.
Yes, yes. A lot of the work is inspired by prisms. In fact, I have several prisms in my studio. So I go in there in the morning, and the way the light is hitting them, it just makes a magical space.
You expanded your media and style into fashion. Can you elaborate on your experiences and how they may have enhanced your artistic development?
Well, Susan, they've been a natural progression. As I work, I experiment a lot. I'm always looking at new surfaces. For a while, I worked with cell-cast acrylic, which looks and feels like glass, but it's not. It's much more substantial. You can drop it and it won't break. And I was painting on that kind of surface for a while. Then I moved into metal, flat metal panels with paintings layered with resin, which is just beautiful. But it was a two-part resin, and the product was very, very toxic, and it made me sick. After a time, I had to stop using it. So with the fashion, this is where artists need to keep in mind that their online presence is very important. This wonderful Japanese fashion designer had his assistant Googling, looking for artwork to use in his spring collection. And so she was online and typing in bold, light, large acrylic paintings, and up came my website. And they looked through and said, oh, this is it. So they called and asked if I would like to collaborate. And what he did was take images of my work, high-res images, and print them on silk. And then from that, he designed a beautiful summer collection, dresses, shirts, pants, little tops. He had a suit, a beautiful black suit with a silk lining that was one of my paintings. So his expertise was incredible, and we opened at Fashion Week in Paris. And it was one of the most exciting days of my life to see my work on a runway. Can you imagine?
No, that must have been awesome.
It was incredible. So, number one, I feel that experimenting is very important to an artist's growth, especially in my case, because I learned so much. But I keep going back. Canvas is home to me. I keep going back to canvas. There's something about it, especially linen. It has a feel and a look that it's very exciting. And to unroll a new, brand new piece of canvas and set it up, it takes my breath away. Isn't that amazing? After all these years.
You've also been invited to participate in the London and Venice Biennales this year, each with a particular theme. How would you describe your experience at these events, and what are you working on that you're going to be submitting?
The one in Venice is a concurrent exhibition called Women's Essence. And they've chosen a curator who is actually from Rome, a writer and curator, selected a group of women from all over the world, and the theme is the sea. So I did a painting called Il Mare in Italian, the sea. And I just had it framed. It's sitting here, has to be shipped out tomorrow. But again, I go back to the internet. This curator saw my work online and sent me a beautiful personal note saying, I believe your work would fit in beautifully with the theme of our show, and I'm writing a book on it, so I will put a little bit about you and your image. And how could I say no? This was amazing.
I can see your work would be just perfect. And then what are you submitting for the London Biennale?
That one is also is kind of sea-oriented, but it's a wide piece, and it's called Restless. 40 by 28 inches, I believe, and that's getting shipped out very quickly, be hung there.
And did they find your work online as well?
Well, I was a part of the inaugural exhibit in 2013, and they showed three pieces in that show. And once you get accepted into one of these, you're on their list, so you don't have to go through such a rigorous selection process. They actually invited me based on what they saw on my website.
And has your affiliation with an organization such as Artwork International Incorporated been helpful with developing your opportunities?
Well, Artwork International is a very interesting concept. This young woman who is in Santa Fe represents a handful of artists, and she helps them manage and develop their careers. And there are very few people who are doing this anymore. It used to be the galleries, but now they're not so much interested in promoting your career as in selling your work. And so I began to notice how the artists she was representing were becoming really successful. So I sent her a note and said, I think I might be at a time in my career where I could use your expertise. And I never heard back from her for 4 years. Then in August of 2017, she wrote me and said, I'm sorry, I've just been too busy, and one of my artists has moved on, and I have a slot, and I would like to meet with you. Well, I nearly fell over. Can you imagine 4 years later? So she came for a visit, and I put my best foot forward, and she loved everything she saw, and I signed on with her. And through her, mind you, she has developed relationships all over the globe with curators and museum directors and writers and art galleries. So her expertise is in identifying the ways in which she can get my work seen by the right people, which is something most artists can't do. We don't have time, no matter how good the work is. So since I signed on with her, she's gotten me in maybe 30 or 40 journals and several galleries and has really opened many, many doors. And as you can imagine, it was a big commitment. She's very expensive, and it was a huge commitment to me. But I have learned throughout my career that artist's best investment is him or herself, better than the stock market, because you know what you're doing, you know where you are in your career, and you know where you want to be. I help with artists, helping them market. I build websites. But when they're at a crossroads and don't know what to do, I encourage them to invest in themselves, try some new materials, maybe collaborate with someone else. Instead of using canvas, try painting on aluminum. Invest in your career, because if you do it, it will pay off over time.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your insight and advice with our audience this evening. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you, Susan. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. That was renowned painter Bette Ridgway speaking with us from Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.